The countless skeins of bramble rack veining through the gullies and mountainside, the impassable breaks and saws of gamble and ash and keening pine, traced now with the passage of native creatures, shoal auroch and turkey buzzard and liquorfish, suspended in eternal movement to rise and fall, to eat and be eaten in a steady progression of a thousand tomorrowless days. Now comes the tread of man, first the Mediaeran boots flickering across the hardscrabble plains, then Northmen for a year or day, for a blinking moment, and then again Mediaeran for years, following the mapless miles of the Occidentalia wildernesses. Blood, the piping hot blood of the creatures hunted and harvested by man, Dvergar and Vaitir alike, spilling into the dust to be joined by the blood of Mediaeran and Ruman and Northmen, watered with blood, drenched in the hot stuff, at the clawed hands of Vaitir and the swords and guns of men. Dispossessed, too, the land. The dwarves held it, and the stretchers hunted it, ravenous ghosts, not knowing the bounty and treasure they had, and with the coming of the Ruman, hellfire in one hand and whiskey in the other, they lost it. Dispossessed of land and identity, too, not knowing where to belong, and only realizing it maybe when the Rumans, when we, gave them something to fight against. Dispossessed of home and hearth, but never the Vaitir, never the stretcher, the genius loci, the leaping lord. It is he that is the possessor of the land and the west, and while he might die, he will never relent of it or be dispossessed. Unlike me. We sail to Rome. I have no home but where Fisk is, and he is lost to me. Juvenus, pale-faced and sweating, entered our stateroom after a polite knock. He'd put on his suit and even wore a tie, though we'd become inured to the sight of the man sweating in shirt-sleeves. The now sea grew high with towering swells, and the weather had turned cold, but the innards of the Malfas were always hot, hellish hot. I greeted him, as Lupina fed young Fiscalian, and Carnelia stretched, sore from her armatura.
"Miss Livia,"
the captain said. Behind him stood two Lascars bearing carbines and frightened, taut expressions. He cleared his throat and scratched at his arm. The bare white of a fresh bandage peeked from the cuff. "How may I help you?" I asked. I pointed at his wrist. "You come to me freshly bandaged, and not by my hand, so I assume you have had use of a quotidian, and have received a message, and that it bodes ill for us."
"I am here,"
he said, clearing his throat and tugging down his cuff to cover the bandage,
"to relieve you of your quotidian device, madam, by order of Tamburlaine himself."
He looked uncomfortable, and his voice pitched toward nervousness rather than villainy.
"And what reason did he give?"
Carnelia said, straightening. She had sweat plastering her hair to her neck, and was dressed in the loose flowing garb that Sun Huang had insisted they lost Secundus, Tenebrae, and her train in. Carnelia placed her hand on the gian that she'd negligently sat upon the dresser. The two Lascars shifted their weight.
"His emperor and our great father,"
Juvenus said. The words were rote and came from him like stones falling from one's mouth.
"He need not explain himself to me." "I am of as noble blood as he," Carnelia said. "Cornelians can trace our history back to the gods, just as Tamburlaine can."
Juvenus lowered his head. The muscles popped and worked in his cheek.
"I am sorry, Livia, Carnelia. I am sorry. You are to be placed under guard until we reach Room. This is his command.
Is Tenebrae also to be placed under guard? I asked. Juvenus paused.